What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 162 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the man, the myth, the legend. He's not really a myth anymore. He's more of a legend. The king of the courtside, of course. Joey, what's up, buddy?
Ah, just like the Yeti, a legend of old. John, it's been a long week. It has been a very long week for me. In particular, like, I have a ton going on at work, as well as stuff going on with OTN, and we're preparing for some events and different things here and there. So I'm exhausted. It has been quite a long week, and I am ready to sleep tonight.
How dare you let real life get in the way of Level Up Nation and the Level Up Podcast? How dare
it's
you
not,
show
John,
up tired?
That's why we are here, baby. That is why we are here.
Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That is at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, why not give your favorite talking heads a follow? If you're watching here live on Twitter, you can find those handles below those horrific mugshots you're currently staring at. Joey with his beautiful blue polo. Is that a polo shirt you're wearing?
Nice.
You can find Joey at Courtside King. You can find myself at Fiasco. If you are, again, watching on Twitch, they are right there in front of your face. If you are listening on your podcatcher of choice, they will be in the show notes for you below. And Nation, while you're at it on that podcatcher of choice, the Level Up Podcast is now available on Spotify, Stitcher, as well as iTunes and Google Play. And we would hope you would take just a small moment out of your day to leave us a very awesome review. Or a not-so-awesome review if there's something you don't like about the show. We're totally open-minded and open-eared for all praises and critiques. Reviews do go a long way, helping grow the audience and our listeners. So we would take a moment, or we would be happy if you would take a moment out of your day to leave us a review. Nation, with that out of the way, the Washington Justice held their first homestand of Season 3 this past weekend at the Anthem in Washington, D.C., it was absolutely fantastic. It may not have had the results Justice fans were hoping for, but nonetheless, it was a fantastic experience. Joey, that just so happens to be one of the multitude of topics we're covering on episode 162. What else are we talking about this week?
John, we've had a lot of big, impactful partnerships out there, but one in particular, not maybe the biggest of impacts, but one of the coolest ones out there, Halo and Nerf. We'll be partnering up on the show this week, John. So excited to talk about that. We also have I'm going to mispronounce this, even though I wrote out a pronunciation for it. I believe it's the Louvre Agreement that came out in CSGO. This is going to be a huge monumental agreement, especially in the full world of esports. On top of that, we have an official high school sport for esports over there in Utah and much, much more.
Utah making news? What? All right, Joey. That's a lot to digest. I feel like we're going to need a little assistance here this week. And of course, I am talking about the drink of choice that will aid us through this episode. So, Joey, for the 162nd time, your beverage, please.
John, we're going Woodford Reserve tonight. A long week, a nice long draw of bourbon. And I got my stones back, so no watered down bourbon either.
Oh my, there you go. I've recently discovered I'm a little dehydrated. I am pulling a Joey and go with the good old-fashioned H2O today to try to rebound from dehydration. Guys, dehydration is a serious thing. Don't do it. Drink your water. Have fun. Even if you play video games, hydration is a huge, huge thing. If you work out, definitely is a massive thing. Really, hydration is really important in your everyday life as well. So drink your water. That is an official message from the Level Up Podcast. Joey, we have our beverages. We have our H2O sponsorship and PSA out there. Let's get right into gaming and Sports news. Let's go.
John, kicking things off with some Battle Royale roster moves. We have FaZe Clan adding Dids as their new PUBG head coach. And in Fortnite, we have Gen G adding Moki as their new Fortnite pro, as well as 100 Thieves, always seeming to be in the news, stealing the spotlight, adding Fortnite pro content creator and winner of the recent DreamHack Anaheim event. That's Mr. Savage.
Yeah, you know, with Fortnite, it's always interesting because it feels like every other week we're either talking about teams getting rid of Fortnite players or teams picking up Fortnite players. 100 Thieves really killing, especially in the creation content. I feel like that's where Fortnite will thrive. Not really per se on the pro scene. Joey, you and I have talked about it on the show quite a bit, how a Battle Royale league would be very difficult, would be very difficult to watch and really kind of focus in on. It's more of a tournament-based kind of thing where it's a, you know, 1 or 2 day event, you know, throw it all together, finish it up in 2 days and move on to the next one kind of thing. But when it comes to content creation, that's really where the bread and butter is for Fortnite. I like the moves for 100 Thieves here. Really taking this whole like content and lifestyle-esque approach to their brand. I really like what they're doing there.
Right, and three great additions all across the board. You have the two content creators as well as real competitors, I guess you can say, as far as like the World Cup and a lot of Fortnite competitions for the Gen G and 100 Thieves moves, but also FaZe Clan. PUBG is one of those scenes that you and I have questioned. The Battle Royale scene, we've questioned PUBG over and over before, but it still continues to expand in Asia, especially with the mobile scene. So I do like the fact that we continue to see people investing into that PUBG scene with them starting to see some return on that investment. Over to Rainbow Six, which has returned a lot of investment. C9 is making some moves over there. Them and Heady, one of their players, are parting ways. It looks like they will find a replacement soon, but I have not seen one just yet for that C9 player. C9 being one of those teams that's been in Rainbow Six for a while. Also in many, many other scenes, similar to Team Liquid, C9 feels like that next team in NA as far as number of teams and number of scenes that they compete in. So I do expect them to fill that spot pretty soon, as well as to stay in Rainbow Six as Rainbow Six just continues to grow as well. And then over to Gears, we do see one team returning over there, and that is Elevate. They're returning to the Gears 5 scene. Again, bear with me on these players' names. I believe it's Phelpsy, Hydrone, M. Crims, Crazed M, Jack Fex, and Rubik's. So Elevate returning to the Gears scene. Again, Gears is one of those smaller scenes out there. A lot of what we think holds it back is the gore in the game. You really can't go super mainstream with a mature game like that. At the same point, Elevate is one of those scenes or one of those organizations that's on a smaller level than someone like a Team Liquid, a Fnatic, or a Cloud9. So finding scenes like Gears of War, Rocket League has been another great entry for a lot of people. These are the scenes that you want to enter in as a small organization to get your name out there. Anything else on those moves, Sir Fiasco?
Sir Fiasco. No, I love it. We talked about it quite a bit. I do wish Gears all the best. Unfortunately, their gore is going to be the biggest thing to hold you back. If you could find a way around that, you know, awesome, great, then I can actually see it doing well. But the issue is that's what makes Gears that game, is that gore. I mean, it's what they've built almost their entire franchise around, is having that in there when most other games try to shy away from that for obvious reasons. And it makes sense. I'm not going to knock a game for not having blood and gore in there, and I'm not going to knock a game for having blood and gore in there. But for an esport title, it's going to be very, very, very tough. But it's still nice to see organizations are still buying into this idea that Gears can be an esport, and they're not afraid to go into that area with a game that has that gore issue. Really holding it back. Like, you're not going to see this on Disney XD. You're not going to see this on ABC on a Sunday. You're not going to see this on ESPN. It's going to be mainly online content and streaming for Gears going forward. It's really going to have a hard time breaking that barrier, if you will, to the mainstream.
Right. And I don't know if we mentioned this before. There is ways to turn off the gore in the game itself. But then again, John, I mean, even if there's no gore spring out and you're still chainsawing something or you're head stomping something, it's still a little on those questionable lines of putting out there for mainstream audiences like that, even turning the gore off. I mean, the other thing is, like, even if you were to turn it off, even if you reduce that gore, then your main hardcore audience that really enjoys the grittiness of the series, and maybe at the gore, maybe at the language, maybe at whatever, if you cut that out, then you can lose some of your mainstream as well. So they kind of have to walk a fine line there for the esports scene. Halo, they are not going to nerf their game, John. They are buffing it here, but it's with a partnership with Nerf. It's going to be Halo Nerf guns in preparation for the launch of Halo Infinite. I posted a beautiful little link there if you want to click on it. We have a sneak peek at what three of the guns are going to look like. And it looks like the assault rifle, the main pistol, as well as the needler. I am stoked for the idea of a Nerf needler.
Yeah, when I saw that earlier this week, I was pretty pumped about the whole needler thing. Remember playing Halo 1 and Halo 2 and just going dualies on the needlers. I won't tell you what we called that, but I'm pretty sure if you were playing that game back in the day, you probably called it the exact same thing. It's a lot of fun, and I am going to go out of my way and purchase this for myself. I'll probably never use it. I can't remember the last time I shot a Nerf gun, But just like from a nostalgic point of view, this gun looks incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the assault rifle looks good too. The pistol looks all right. They just don't stand out to me as much. Like, the assault rifle, I guess, is iconic Halo. It's been around since the old days. It looks very iconic, but it doesn't have that wow factor like the Needler does. The fact that the Needler has the needles sticking out and they're somehow nerf-based is what we're assuming here. Like, oh, that's just, it's different. It's unique. It's very Halo. I can't think of a Needler gun in any other game, to, at least to my knowledge. And this one looks very much iconic Halo, even with the without the name on the side of it. So I love the design. I'm super excited to see what other guns. If there's another Halo gun out there, John, that you could make into a Nerf gun, do you have any other weapons you'd want to turn over?
Sticky grenades. No, there's no way you're going to make a plasma grenade Nerf anything. I mean, the only other thing really is the energy sword. I mean, that's really the other iconic weapon, but that doesn't work as a Nerf gun either. And they already have foam versions of the energy sword out there that you can buy. So, I mean, really, those are your iconic weapons from the Halo series, is the Needler and the energy sword, at least in my opinion. Those are the two big things that stick out to me when I think Halo.
Right, yeah. You have a plasma cannon. You have the sniper rifle. It has some iconic parts to it, but I don't really think anything sticks up to like the Needler or the energy sword. And like you said, the energy sword as a Nerf weapon probably wouldn't quite have the same effect. So I do like the fact they went the Needler out here, and we'll have to see what else comes of that. But that's not the only Halo partnership, John. We also have Halo and Mega Constructs announcing a partnership as well. They are teasing a Warthog as well as a possible boat build. So I love the idea of the Warthog. The Warthog, again, very iconic, a good way to really hit the nostalgia of past Halo fans as well as excite the new Halo fans that possibly come in with Infinite. At the same point, there has never been a Halo boat in the series, to my knowledge. Do you think this is a tease of just possible creations from this particular kit that we could see made out of Halo? Or do you think this is actually a deeper tease of that we might be getting a boat in Infinite?
You know, why not? Why not do a deep tease for what Infinite's going to bring us? I mean, look, Halo is a series that has really lasted the test of time without too much coming out to really sustain it throughout the years. I mean, it's Halo built a name for itself. The community surrounded it, and they still love it to this very day. And then it just started trickling back a little bit, you know, and now it's available on PC, and they're kind of re-revving that Halo engine, and it's getting a lot of the older gamers that, you know, grew up with Halo, with the original Halo series, and the younger gamers as well, excited about Halo again. And it's great. You know, Mega Constructs, Warthog, amazing. If there's going to be a boat, cool. If that's a deep tease for a title coming up later on down the line, cool. Let it be so. Like, that would be awesome. I feel like Halo fans and just gamers in general are incredibly excited for these games coming out, for the just awesome Halo content that's going to be everywhere, flooding the gaming market, if you will. I think you cannot go wrong pushing anything Halo right now.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. And I think the fact that they're pushing it this early, like toward the end of winter, beginning of spring, we'll probably get more information leading up to E3, more information for Halo Infinite at E3. What's the other one? Gamescom, I think, comes after E3, if I remember correctly, like September or August. So we'll see a few different tournaments come up where we'll get to see more and more Halo information come out. But the tease of a boat, that's something I'd really love to see. We see boats in a lot of different series, from Rainbow Six to Call of Duty, and they've always done a really good job of either making it some kind of stealth mission where we have sniper aspects involved, or where you're sneaking into an area and then attacking from the side. I feel like Halo is one of those series that could really utilize something like a boat on water very effectively. It would also be fun to throw into multiplayer as well, where they do a great job with vehicles too. So we'll have to wait and see on that one, but I am excited by the prospect. Last but not least, we're going to move from Halo the game to Halo Esports, and that is the HCS, the Halo Championship Series. They have partnered with Esports Engine. Esports Engine will be their global management partner for Halo Infinite Esports. John, we have seen a ton of Halo announcements, a lot of them based on toys, a lot of them based on Infinite, the game itself, and a lot of them based on the esports scene. They are beefing this up big time. Now a huge partnership with Esports Engine. They brought in a lot of talent from the CSGO scene as well on their esports side. I believe they brought in talent from Riot Games as well. So they have a ton of people with a load of esports experience from two of the healthiest scenes out there in League of Legends and in CSGO. They are looking at making Halo big. The Halo esports scene has really never been big outside of Halo 3, I feel like. When it was with MLG, it did quite well, but it almost felt like it was before its time, if you ask me. Now, a few years later, Halo 4, Halo 5, it just, it hasn't been there. The effect has not been there. The energy, the excitement has not been there. Now making these partnerships, surrounding the excitement of Halo Infinite, the excitement of all these younger fans that have never really jumped into Halo, and now with it launching on PC as well for the first time ever, I think this is a huge partnership that is just, I don't want to say the beginning of a lot more because this is huge in and of itself, but I feel like this is not the last partnership we're going to see, and I think it's going to be a very, very big one when we look at the full Halo scene overall moving into Infinite.
Oh, 100% agree. This is a step in the right direction. Halo esports, you hit the nail on the head. Outside of Halo 3, it hasn't really been much of anything. And this partnership is going to help take them to that next level. And I'm really excited to see what kind of creativity both of these organizations, both the Halo Championship Series esports engine, are going to bring to the table with this partnership. Halo fans, get excited. There's a ton of Halo stuff coming. It's great.
Yeah, and Microsoft, we can praise them on a lot of things. We can hit them negatively on a lot of things as well. One of the big negatives for Microsoft the past couple of years has been the way they've run their esports scene. 343 and Microsoft have really left a lot to be desired here with the Halo esports scene. But now bringing in esports engine, we're looking at ecosystem design, format and league operations, broadcasts, and more. One of those and more being a full one-year roadmap coming out as well. So a lot of work already being done on the front end. And if you're going to prepare an esports scene that has done well in the past with Halo 3, I think this is the way to go about it. How do we jump from that amazing nostalgia of Halo 3, that great grand esports scene of the time, and try to overlap what we've seen with Halo 4 and 5, where it's been a bit lackluster, and jump straight into where we are today with stuff like League of Legends, CSGO, Dota 2, making the hirings they have, as well as partnerships like this, I think the perfect way to do that. Moving over to DreamHack, they have partnered up with Juked to build their official streaming destination for DreamHack Anaheim. This was a good move as well, in my opinion. Juked is one of those newer organizations out there. They're one that, in particular, keeps track of all the esports events happening each and every day. They're kind of like that one-stop shop, kind of like the Level Up podcast for those audio listeners out there, where you can go and visually see where everything is happening in esports. Juked has done a very good job coming out on the scene so far, and now DreamHack partnering up kind of reassures what they've already built there. I like this move by DreamHack. DreamHack is, I'm not going to say hard to follow, but there are many DreamHack events out there. Now partnering up with someone like Juked, I feel like as a viewer, it makes it easier to follow everything at once.
And not just that. I mean, you know, DreamHack, there's a lot to unpack with DreamHack. It's just so much. Like, the average esport viewer is not going to be able to tune into everything, or they may not be interested in everything, or maybe they definitely want to watch one match and they might miss something else. It's very hard to kind of navigate that space with an event so large like any of the DreamHacks. So it's smart because it's essentially giving you that Reader's Digest version of it, if you will, your spark notes of what's happening with these events. You want to see the best plays, you want to see the best matches, you want the best interviews. Condense it all into one medium for esport fans to digest. It's so incredibly smart for DreamHack to be doing this. It is one of the biggest complaints people have had with DreamHack is the ability to try to follow along with everything that goes on at these events. Now, this is a step in the right direction. This is a step for the esport fan who wants to digest everything from DreamHack on their own time. So it's a smart partnership, and I want to see more large convention-style esport tournaments really adapt to this kind of thinking of having that ability to have another organization come in and kind of give you that overall digest of what just happened so everyone can be on the same page.
Right. And I think one of the biggest things with DreamHack compared to a lot of the other ones is the fact that DreamHack hosts so many different events. With League of Legends or CSGO, it's usually just pure that event. With DreamHack, it can be CSGO, Heroes of the Storm, Dota 2, Smash, everything happening that same weekend. So it's very hard to keep everything in track. Something like Juked really simplifies that as well. Over to the biggest news of the podcast, potentially, John, and that is the LUV agreement. This is a groundbreaking new agreement between leading CSGO teams, ESL and DreamHack. They're going to govern the setup of Pro League, which is the league that falls under that DreamHack umbrella, and they're going to share revenue and profit from ESL's pro tour competitions. So these are the bigwigs, ESL, DreamHack, and all these huge CSGO teams coming together for this agreement. The teams will also become majority stakeholders in the league, similar to what we saw with Site B. which ended up being called, what, Flashpoint? Was that the name of it?
I believe Flashpoint. So, yeah.
Yeah, so the other league, it pulled in C9 and a few other teams here and there. This is kind of like the big daddy one, it looks like. It's going to be a long-term participation slot as well involved with those franchising fees. So between them, the signatories of the agreement have won 28 ESL and DH master-level competitions, 2 Intel Extreme Grand Slams, and in the last 4 years, they represent all 10 of the top 10 ranked teams. This is the big boy deal, John. This is taking, and I guess I want to say it's no, it's hard to say this, but like Flashpoint, I think is a great idea. I think Monty and Thorin are really building something great over there. But one of our biggest concerns was the names that they got to sign on. It was like C9 and a bunch of other teams that were outside the top 10. Now over here, you have all 10 of the top 10 teams. When you look at the franchising for this league, it's a lot easier to justify spending the money. This is a league that you can argue there's a good chance it's going to be very high-level competition pulling in a ton of big viewers for year on year. Now, with C9 signing the Flashpoint deal, I think that's a great move for them as well because they're funding a prize pool they're most likely going to win anyway. But for a lot of those other smaller teams, it's like, eh, maybe not. With this one, you're looking at a bunch of top 10 teams. You're looking at huge names here with ESL and DreamHack. You're looking at a lot of long-term longevity as well. And I think if you're going to franchise with one league and you have the choice, this is probably the league to do it with, at least at this point.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe that Cloud9 deal with Flashpoint, maybe they might start regretting that a little bit. You know, maybe Cloud9 wants to be with the big boys, essentially. And that's what we have here with this agreement is, like you said, Joey, you read off that list, that very impressive resume that the teams that have signed on in this agreement have. So if you're a Cloud9, yeah, you know what? It's great. You're playing in a league in Flashpoint that you're probably going to win day in and day out. Now, here's the biggest question. You want to sign new talent. You want to bring people to your team to compete. If I'm a player, I want to prove myself at the highest level. Am I going to sign with Cloud9 in Flashpoint with a bunch of small organizations that are kind of up and coming, or am I going to try to get on with a team that has partnered in this agreement? I'm probably going to try to get into this massive, massive groundbreaking agreement with this impressive resume of teams that are going to be joining. That's going to be something that's going to be held against Cloud9. That's something that they're going to have to focus on going forward is how are we going to attract players? How are we going to keep our players from not wanting to transfer or be traded or be sold off or buy into a different team that's competing? And essentially, what you can argue is the major leagues versus the minor leagues. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Flashpoint and Cloud9. Are they going to stay in with Flashpoint, or are we going to see them try to make a move into this new groundbreaking agreement?
Now, see, John, it's very interesting that you bring up minor leagues because that's exactly how I feel as well. I feel like now with your top 10 teams in this one, it almost makes Flashpoint into that minor league, except a minor league with all of the hardcore talent. I mean, you have like Monte Cristo over there, potentially Doa. You have Moses over there and Thorin. Like, there is so much huge CSGO talent. I would even argue like social media presence as well, just between all of those casters and talent and analysts that are over there. So you have a huge following with Flashpoint in and of that, but the organizations themselves do fall a bit short when compared to the top 10 over here and the 2 Intel Extreme Grand Slams as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. We're going off very little at the moment. We don't know too much about the money of what teams are being asked to pay. We don't know the revenue sharing model either. We really only know the teams involved. And if we're looking at the teams involved, Flashpoint and talent versus top 10 over here, this one's looking a lot better, at least for now. So we'll have to see how it all shakes out. It looks like they will correspond and hit each other as far as scheduling, at least in this first season. I would not be surprised to see that change either later down the road. Esports have escalated. In case you haven't noticed, John, over the last couple of years, they've continued to go up, up, up. Unfortunately, not like the stock market this past week, but it is now an official sport in Utah, John. Of all the states, all of our lovely states here in the United States, did you expect Utah to be the first one to make it an official high school sport?
If you had Utah anywhere on your bingo sheet, go ahead and just claim bingo, your bingo victory, and take a shot. No, when I think Utah, I don't think official high school esports league. I think of many other things, but that's not one of them. Kudos to Utah. I mean, that's a very out of character move for them. Now, you know, you don't want to get too political, but, you know, when you take a look at areas of the country that are accepting of esports and that are kind of open-minded to this idea of competitive video gaming, it's not exactly the conservative states that you would assume would be open-minded to the idea of kids sitting behind a computer screen playing a video game for credit or for a varsity sport or something like that. So that's kind of what shocked me here a little bit with Utah going out of their way and declaring it an official high school varsity sport, in essence. So kudos to them for doing that. You know, you expect that out of, you know, places like California, New York, Virginia, maybe Florida, Ohio, places with large populations that tend to be, you know, you can make an argument a little more accepting of video games and their role in society. But Utah is still a very traditional state, and, you know, I'm not saying it's wrong or it's good, but a more traditional state where they favor their traditional sports. So it's a very bold move by Utah, not knocking them, but it is a little shocking that it was Utah before some other states. So kudos. I love the idea. I think it's great, and I think it's actually going to help their kids in school in Utah become more engaged with what's going on in the world. I think it's great.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Usually when we see big moves, especially on the technology sector or in esports and gaming in general, it feels like it's either California, New York, Florida, or Massachusetts, if I had to name four. It just feels like they're always the one pushing forward in these certain areas. Regardless of political beliefs and all of that, I feel like it's just the technology portion as well. Mm-hmm. When you look at California, you have the Silicon Valley area. You have tons of tech companies starting out over there as well. Washington State is another one. With their huge tech sector as well, with Microsoft up there and a number of other big companies. So it is very, very interesting that it's Utah here. When I think Utah, like you, John, esports and gaming are not the first thing to come to mind. So very surprised by this, but I love the move from Utah. And with someone like that that takes, I guess we can say, a more conservative view, like you said, the fact that they're usually a little later to the party on making these big, bold moves, the fact that they're doing this so early on, I think could be a big thing for other states that eventually look into bringing esports programs as official sport or esport programs at a high school level. Good stuff, Utah. Keep it up. Legendary League of Legends pro Faker, John. He is no Faker. He is a boss. He is the Demon King himself, as some refer to him. Faker's amazing. He's been around the scene for quite a while. He's done a whole lot of winning, a lot more winning than I have ever done and even dreamt of doing. And he's now doing it as a part owner of T1, one of the biggest organizations over there in South Korea and Asia in general. I like this move. If you're looking at players that you want to invest long-term in, it doesn't get much better than Faker. You're looking at the biggest esports scene in the world in League of Legends. You're looking at arguably the biggest personality that has ever hit esports. Yeah, not personality like cockiness of some people out there, but personality in the sense that he is the best. He has proven it time and time again. Yes, he has some games where he's not the greatest here and there, but it seems like whenever we wrap around to Worlds, he always pops off. He is Faker. There's not a single name in League of Legends. I don't care how casual you are, you've probably heard the name Faker. If you're going to partner up with anyone, do it with someone who's been around the organization for so long. He's won, what, John, 3 titles with them as well? 3 world titles?
Yeah, it's either 3 or 4. I'll double check real quick, but it's three or four.
It's up there. And world championships are hard to win. World championships in video games feel even harder to win just because people age out of the game very quickly in most cases. Faker has been around at the top level of the scene for so long, bringing those championships to the organization, bringing so many views and population highlights and everything as far as his being in SKT at the time and now T1 have been. I think if you're going to give it to anyone, someone like Faker who's been loyal, who's stuck with the organization, even though people have offered him God knows how much money. I mean, the NA offer he had last year, I want to say it was over 6 digits, 7 digits, maybe even tons and tons of money being offered. He stayed loyal to South Korea as well as loyal to his organization, and I think this is a great way to repay him.
Just real quick, his career highlights: a 3-time world champion in 13, 15, and 16. In 16, he was world's MVP. 2-time MSI champion in 16 and 17, and in 16, he was MSI MVP. Rift Rivals champion in 2019. We can toss that one out. That's not important. 8-time LCK champion, and 3 times he was MVP for the LCK. He has currently, as career prize money, just from winning, that this does not include his salary, sponsorship deals, streaming, none of it. Just straight up winning. $1.2 $5 million so far.
It's impressive. I can guarantee it's probably quadruple that if we look at the salary alone.
Oh yeah, for sure. But this is just straight up prize money. It's not bad.
Freaking insane. By the way, our newest investor to OTN. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, Faker, please.
When we expand into Asia, we're gonna go knock on his door. Bethesda taking a different vein here, John. This is a big move. And it is going to send a ton more shaking in the cloud gaming industry. And this is Bethesda following Activision's lead and pulling their games from NVIDIA's GeForce Now. John, NVIDIA GeForce Now launched like last week. It's this huge computing platform. It's going to knock Stadia out of the water because Stadia didn't kill itself enough already. And then we have Microsoft's Project xCloud looking to launch sometime this quarter probably. So NVIDIA's like, hey, we're going to beat out Microsoft. We're going to get out there first. We're going to say, hey, Microsoft, you might have the Xbox, but we're freaking NVIDIA. We have the graphics card. We're powerful. And they've done that. GeForce Now is an incredible product. It's very good. It's very low latency. But they're draining titles here and there. Activision, you're losing World of Warcraft. You're losing, Overwatch, Heroes of the Storm, if you still count it, Diablo, all of their big titles. And now you have Bethesda pulling out. Those are all your Morrowinds, your Elder Scrolls, your Skyrim. They have so many games. Fallout is another huge series over there. So you're losing tons and tons of stuff. So Activision was a dagger. Bethesda is a bullet. And what's going to come next? And why are they leaving? Are they leaving because they want their games bought through another server? I don't think that's the issue, because why not allow people to play it via cloud as well? I think they're leaving because someone is buying exclusivity deals. And I would think it's Google first. And I definitely thought it was Google with Activision. But with Bethesda leaving, I could see that actually be Microsoft jumping into exclusives as well.
Yeah, really, the exclusive title is pretty much the only reason I see these moves happening, at least in my opinion. Because, you know, the having your game accessible to multiple platforms, to multiple streaming devices, is always a smart move because you reach a larger audience. You know, if it's part of a streaming service, obviously your games are included. You get a cut of the income because your games are included. When you become exclusive, you're essentially saying, hey, look, we recognize we could reach more users, but we can reach the user base that we know is going to play our game, that is going to appreciate our game, that is going to really focus on our game by signing this exclusive deal with this platform or with that platform. And kind of force people to go with that platform. And I agree with you, Joey. I think it's either Google or it's either Microsoft. Who knows? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's just a backlash against NVIDIA, which would not make any sense to me whatsoever. But, you know, it's weird because NVIDIA is not really seen as the bad guy, if you will, in the gaming industry. It's kind of a unique decision that really the only thing that would make sense for it to happen would be an exclusive deal with a major name that's not NVIDIA.
I mean, it also feels awkward to me, if we're being honest. Like, NVIDIA, I'm thinking most of the people that are doing the streaming are probably going to be on laptops, for example. Microsoft is aiming mostly at mobile devices, and the same with Google Stadia. I mean, they're looking at the plug-and-play type of thing with TVs here. So neither one of them really feels just quite right to me either. Unless we're looking purely at the game perspective. So this is just me being entrepreneurial, but I'm also wondering, what if AMD is trying to get into this cloud streaming too and is flying under the radar as well? Because they're the only other one I can think of is like AMD or Intel, because they're the next big competitors. If you look at direct competitors of NVIDIA, that's their direct competitors. If we look at chipsets, if we look at graphics cards. So yeah, Microsoft and Google as far as titles and cloud streaming in general, but I don't know. It doesn't quite feel right to me just yet. Anything else on that one, good sir?
No, sir.
Good. Well, this next section is about to be all you. Because I understand some of this stuff, but I do not understand it at the level I'm hoping you do. And this is Microsoft's Xbox division announcing more details on the specs of the Xbox Series X console set to launch later this year. John, one thing we've really seen from Microsoft that we've never seen before, but it's so far, it's been really a big theme since December of last year, is really spontaneity with their announcements. They chose a random Monday, this past Monday, really, to drop this information on us. Why a Monday? Why a random Monday with no conference or anything around it? They're just dropping their 12 teraflops on down on Twitter, and everyone is freaking out because now all this information is being confirmed. And this is a little sad, but I looked at the specs on some of this stuff, and supposedly it's supposed to run better than my PC does for this next Xbox console coming out next year. Some of the features they're mentioning, though, I just pulled some of them out here. We have the 12 teraflops. We have variable rate shading. We have hardware accelerated DirectX ray tracing, quick resume for multiple games, and smart delivery. So, John, I'm going to let you take it away with the variable rate shading as well as the hardware accelerated DirectX ray tracing. I know they're very big graphic components. They're going to make things look gorgeous. Other than that, I don't really understand the specifics as well as you probably do.
Yeah, so variable rate shading is essentially, think of it like, it's essentially pixelation. It's how clear the image is going to be, how clear the shadows are going to look. Are we going to see shadow bleeding, or are we going to see anything that's going to distort the shadows, make it look not smooth, not real? The whole idea is to have these games look as realistic as possible. Take our graphics for gaming to that next level. DirectX has been around forever. It's a coding program for graphics for multimedia. So that's nothing new there. That's just new hardware coming out from DirectX. The big thing here is that variable rate shading is absolutely insane. From everything I've read on it, it's just absolutely absurd. And when you team that up with the 12 teraflops, now the big thing to remember when it comes to teraflops is essentially the processor. So it's how fast the processor works. So you have normal clock speeds of processors, which are gigahertz. A teraflop is essentially a different mathematical equation to determine how fast a processor can calculate, essentially. And one teraflop equals 1 trillion point operations a second. So you're essentially looking at 12 trillion floating point operations per second. It is absolutely absurd and fast. When you factor that in with these graphical updates, you are talking like load times are going to be so much shorter. The graphics are going to be so much better. And the processor is going to be able to handle that massive, massive workload because it is specifically built to handle this next generation of graphics. It's a big thing. I would be the two things to really take away here is the graphical update. The specs between the current generation, between the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 to this current generation for what Xbox announced with this next generation platform is massive. Think of it. If you can go back in time and take a look at the jump from PlayStation 1 to PlayStation 2, that graphical jump was massive. From these specs, I would expect something almost as similar as that massive jump between the 12 teraflops and the graphical updates we're going to see built into this console. It truly is becoming a multimedia home device versus a gaming console with these massive changes.
Absolutely, John. And if you look at the original consoles of the generation, like the Xbox One as well as the PS4, the base editions with no Pros and no Series X's and all this crazy fun things that Microsoft adds to the end of their consoles, I think it's an even bigger jump than we probably saw from PS1 to PS2 based on the actual launch editions of these consoles. Mm-hmm. So again, not talking about the Xbox One X or the PS4 Pro, but talking about the base editions, I think this jump is going to be ginormous from the stats I've seen at least. On top of that, John, we have quick resume for multiple games. This is so cool just based on conceptuality. So when you look at the console, you're playing a game, usually load up, let's say FIFA, for example. You're playing FIFA. Sometimes you'll jump to your friends list. Sometimes you'll jump to some menus here and there. Let's just say John is playing Ultimate Team on FIFA and he throws a player up for auction, but then he wants to jump back and continue his Tomb Raider game. He can do that simultaneously, practically, at this point. You can jump to Tomb Raider, you hear the ding on the auction, and you can jump right back. No load time at all is what they're promising. That, to me, is absolutely insane if they can deliver on that. I don't think this will be a Microsoft-only thing. I would not be surprised if Sony does this as well. But the fact that your processing chips, this RDNA 2, are going to be that strong to allow for that quick jump from game to game and the load times being that small, is just, it really jumps into the consoles becoming PCs in a sense. So yes, you can still use your controller. Yes, it's still going to be placed in your living room, but we're now talking strength that rivals much closer to a PC than a home console.
And that's exactly what this is. This is exactly taken from the PC gamer side of everything. You have a gaming PC, you can run multiple applications and you can switch between the two. And if you have a strong enough processor and graphics card and your system is freaking absurd, you can do multiple games. We're talking 4, 5, 6 games at once if you really wanted to. Now, you know, ask how many hardcore gamers switch between games at the exact same time. It might be 1 or 2, maybe 3 games at the absolute most. But generally, you have one graphically intensive game, and let's say you're a streamer and you're a high level streamer. Let's say you're really good at League of Legends, and your queue time is like a half an hour. You're not going to sit in queue for a half an hour with people watching you. You're just not going to do it. You're going to load up another game that you can play. You know, you see Sneaky from Cloud9 do it all the time. He'll pull up like Dark Souls or play whatever game he wants to play, and still play and interact with his community while they wait for that queue. That's essentially what we're going to be able to see here on console with this idea, and it's incredibly smart to do it this way. Also, I'd actually be curious to see the amount of people who actually wanted this feature for a console device. It's smart. I'm kind of curious if demand really was there for it. But anywho, it's a great feature that I feel like a lot of console players were missing out on for not being CPU players or computer players. This is going to open up some new doors for console players. And, you know, who knows? Console streamers are growing in size and number, especially with capture cards becoming more affordable. And you can use a laptop as a stream system, so it doesn't put a lot of effort on a process. You don't have to have something that's absolutely massive to run a stream and play a video game because it's going through a capture card. So who knows? This could be a massive doorway for console gamers now with this ability, streaming content as well.
Right, and I'm thinking the games are just an example of the stuff that we can see here. One of the big ones that comes to mind for me is Spotify. Like, if I want to play on the Xbox and jump between my Spotify playlist back and forth, I think this is a cool way to do that. Again, it specifies games here, but I think that's just another example between apps that you'll be able to do that. I'm also thinking, like, maybe you're playing Overwatch and you're queuing up for DPS, and 99% of the players out there want to play DPS right now. Well, hey, your queue time is going to be a little bit longer. Why not jump over and play a little bit of Cuphead here and there? Or maybe you're playing with Fiasco and he decides to take a 2-hour lunch. You can just jump over to a single player game without having to unpause it, right, John?
Yes, sort of.
The last thing here to hit on, again, there was some other stuff that broke out, but just one more to hit on that I think is really cool and I think that a lot of gamers are going to appreciate. That is smart delivery, John. This is one of the coolest things I've ever heard implemented into gaming, and something that I feel is years late, if we're being completely honest. Let's say, for example, John has an Xbox One, and John decides he wants to buy a game like Cyberpunk 2077 this year. So John buys his game, and then he doesn't upgrade to the Xbox Series X in December. He decides he wants to wait 6 months and then upgrade. Then he has to, I really like Cyberpunk's multiplayer. He has to buy the game completely all new again. This smart delivery is going to allow developers to optimize the games per console. So if John buys the Xbox One edition, he's automatically, because Cyberpunk has already agreed to this, he will automatically get the new generation copy of Cyberpunk optimized for his new Xbox One X or Series X or whatever. These names really need to change. but overall, I think this is really cool. I think this is one of those things that I don't know if I see a ton of developers buying into because they want to make that extra profit from those console switches. But as far as from a gamer-centric point of view, I don't think it gets much better than this. The whole Play Anywhere thing that Xbox has done is great. I think they've really made accessibility in gaming a lot better as well for a lot of gamers. But this as well, the affordability of games, with games going up in price, it feels like every single time. Now they're at $60 for a lot of these console-based games. Now you can buy it once and get it for that new console when you upgrade as well. So not only is it going to make it more affordable to upgrade because you're only going to pay that console price and it usually comes with a controller or two already, now you don't have to rebuy some of those games that kind of fell on that bleeding edge of that next generation. This is possibly, if developers buy into it, like Cyberpunk has here, it's going to make that transition a lot cleaner, especially with Game Pass involved as well.
Joe, you said this was years late. I'm going to go ahead and put this out there. This is generations late. The idea of having to buy a game multiple times because either you aren't buying into the new generation or you're waiting for a sale on the new generation or something like that is absolutely absurd, especially with how expensive these games are nowadays. You want to protect your investment. It is not uncommon to see a dip in video game sales the year leading up to a new console being announced and put up for sale. It's completely common to see that. And this is a safe way to protect the consumer, the gamers, you. Because who wants to drop $120 buying the exact same game twice for upgrading? I mean, you're absolutely insane. If you're a developer and you're going to put all this time and effort into a video game, and you're going to release it fully well knowing it's going to come out before the next generation of console is, I mean, yeah, okay, I get it. From a business standpoint, you're looking for the double grab. I get it. It makes sense. I'm not going to argue with you, the developer, for wanting to get, you know, twice the money for the diehard gamer that wants to upgrade his system and have to buy the game again. But at the same time, it's like you yourself as the developer, you have to make two different versions of the game, one that will run on the old console and one that will run on the new console. And obviously the one that runs on the new console is going to be the most effective version of that game with the best graphics, the best performance, the best everything. You as a developer, you want to show off that talent. Why not tell the gamers, look, we want you to play our game. We understand you may not be able to drop $600, $700, $800 on the new console right away, but when you are ready to pull that trigger, we want you to see this game you're already enjoying on the old generation of console in its prime. So when you buy it, boom, you're going to have the upgraded version for your new console as well. That is so incredibly smart. I wish more developers would do it. Joey, I agree with you. I don't see more developers doing it. To them, it doesn't make business sense. They're essentially giving away a free copy, if you will. But this is generations late. I can't tell you how many times I've bought a game and 6 months later, you know, the new generation console was on sale or I was able to afford it or whatever, and I pulled the trigger, and guess what? Backwards compatibility didn't exist, or they took it away, so you had to buy another copy of the game. And you're just sitting there like, this is pointless. Or even better, you wanted to play multiplayer? Guess what? You upgrade from the PS3 to the PS4? Guess what? You still have a PS3 version. Let's say it was backwards compatible. You still would only be able to play with PS3 people. You'd have to buy the PS4 game to play multiplayer. It is absurd. I love this move from Cyberpunk, and I wish more developers would do this because it's good for the gaming community. It's good for the gamers. It's good for their investment. It just makes sense. Give back to the community that's giving you so much.
Right. So Xbox has made this available to every single developer. They've given them the technology to do this for Xbox games. So again, Cyberpunk being one of those first games that we're going to see, at least it is now officially announced that it will be using this project delivery on the Xbox. Hopefully more follow-up, like John said. I'm going to leave Game Pass out of this in general, but I like the fact that now we have the smart delivery feature available. We also have Xbox Play Anywhere, which I think is brilliant. If it's an Xbox Game Studio game and you have a PC and an Xbox and you get it on one of them, you have it on all of them. Now, John, this is what I want next. With a game like Overwatch that's available on Xbox and PC and PlayStation and Nintendo Switch, I think they should allow an option with a package deal. So I'm going to pay $60 for this game, right? Why not say, if you pay an extra $10, you get it on two platforms. An extra $20, you get it on three platforms. I mean, I'm totally cool with that. I have no problem giving an extra $20 for a game to get it on something like, let's say, Switch and PC as well as Xbox. That is, I hope, the direction we move. Because yes, as much as I'd love to support some of these games and give $180 to play them on multiple systems, it's just outrageous. Now, from an Overwatch perspective, and I'm just using Overwatch as a random example, let's say I wanted to play it on Xbox, PC, and Switch. I buy it on one, maybe I buy it on a second one, but if they give me the option to upgrade here, I can spend my $80 or $90 or whatever, and then they're going to have more players on all these platforms because maybe I absolutely love Overwatch and I want to play it on the go on my Switch and I want to play it when I'm here on the desktop. It's going to allow the player database, especially for these games that are like multiplayer and esport heavy, it's going to give more players to play. It's going to cut down on those crazy DPS queue times because more players have the option to play because maybe this player A was not able to afford it on Xbox and PC. Now with this extra $10 instead of an extra $60, player A can move between his PC and Xbox here and there. Like, I feel like there's so many other ways to do this. And I love the fact that we see smart delivery here. I note nothing against it. I think it's absolutely brilliant, and I think it's a great move. I just want to see more. I think, in a sense, yes, developers need to make money, but I think this is one way where developers can help support their game and their communities as well as still make an extra penny or two.
Yeah, so essentially what you want to see is the equivalent of the triple pack for movies, where you get the DVD, the Blu-ray, and the digital download. You get three versions of the same movie for maybe 10, 15 bucks more. But now you have it digitally on your mobile device. Now you can watch on your Blu-ray player. And let's say your kid likes the movie also, he can watch it on his standard HD DVD player upstairs as well. It makes sense. It does make sense. I would love if developers would do that. I don't see them doing that. It's a shame. But it's a good thought. And if developers do that, I would love to be proved wrong. I will eat my own crow if that happens. But I don't see that happening, and it's a shame.
I think someone like a CG Projekt Red would consider it. I think some small studios like Studio MDHR that makes Cuphead would consider something like that. One that I do not see considering it is EA Games. I cannot imagine them giving away FIFA for a discounted price on multiple systems. They're going to want to snag you for that $60 on every single one, and they'll probably make you pay for DLC as well, just knowing the way they've operated in the past. So we'll see. It's one of those other things too with DLC, John. I feel like that's another way. Like, maybe you don't discount the DLC. Maybe you give them $80 for all these consoles, but then you make them pay extra for the DLC, like an extra $10 per console or whatever. And I think I'm okay with that, to be honest, if I still get the base game on all of them for a discounted price. Again, I think it would help the audience. I think it helps grow your multiplayer database as well. But if they have to have that money up front, I guess it's just not going to work, at least for now. But I think someone will eventually pull that trigger. And I think that's when we see gaming continue to move toward that the gamer route, really, like we've seen Microsoft this past couple years. Speaking of Overwatch, I actually did not notice this followed my example there. Overwatch has added a new experimental mode, and no, it is not a discount for all of your systems. It is triple damage. John, I do not know if I like the idea. I love the idea of the mode. I think having a mode for players to experiment with new game modes, to experiment with new, I guess we can call them modifiers in a sense, to try out new things, to see how much Moira can annoy people both healing and damage-wise. Now this is a mode where she can do it with triple. I do not like the triple damage component. I love the idea of the experimental mode, but again, the triple damage, at least for the starter, is not quite my cup of tea.
I mean, if Symmetra is not annoying already enough in the hands of a really good Symmetra player, this is going to make it even worse. If you hate Mei, guess what? This is going to make you hate her even more. I like that it's an experimental mode. It's a way to kind of see, you know, people, like, this is the whole reason why cheat codes existed, and I'm going to go really back in the day. The reason why things like Game Sharks existed, to alter these games and give you a different version of the game to play, a version of the game that was broken. And that's the whole point. You either had God mode, or you had infinite ammo, or you had infinite mana, or you had infinite powers, or you were able to unlock something, you know, that wasn't supposed to be unlocked, or something that the developers put in there, then they decided to take out because of a deadline. They couldn't take it out, so they put it behind a wall. Well, they had a code, you know. Experimental modes are unique for that sense that, you know, it's a what if. What would happen if this game was broken and everything was tripled in damage? What happens if everything was tripled in healing? What happens if everything would have been, like, what happens if we triple everyone's movement speed? You know, it'd be like a rat race, you know, something kind of like that. You know, it's unique, it's fun, it's out of the ordinary, it's something so extreme that it would just be a source of fun. And I think that's what they're trying to aim here for. But I can see how some people would get tilted by this idea of triple damage. I like the idea. I think it's unique. It's different. It's out of the box. And it's for Overwatch and Blizzard right now, that's pretty forward thinking of them.
Wow, John, I thought triple damage sounded super toxic until you said triple healing.
Absolutely. Why not?
Oh, that sounds so bad.
It sounds so
Can
great.
You imagine how terrible that would be? You would not be able to take down a Reinhardt. If two healers just focus him and he had his shield too, that would be nearly impossible unless you had triple damage as well.
Oh no, there's and five other players that aren't being focused on healing. Oh no.
I mean, I'm just thinking that hammer is going to be swinging for days. Like,
I mean, but that's why you double it up with triple speed. So your Lucio and that speed burst, you get like whatever double of triple is. Like, what is that? Like, I don't math very well. we'll just say 6 times speed on that burst, and you just go right around him and you cap the point, and then you just boop him back and whatnot. And you're all set. You're fine. There's ways to counter.
Good times, good times. So we'll have to see what other experiments they have. But for now, those of you that want to dive in and get those heroes a pump in that damage, it's triple damage in the new experimental mode. Shifting our focus over to the weekly eSport League and gaming update, John, let's talk Call of Duty League. This past Call of Duty League happened in Atlanta. It was hosted by the Atlanta FaZe. And our final four, the finals on Sunday, February 23rd, were the Atlanta FaZe up against the Minnesota Rocker, and that was 3-2 in favor of the FaZe. And then our other semifinal on Sunday was the Chicago Huntsmen up against the Florida Mutineers. The Mutineers with the upset there, 3-2. One would say they mutinied their opponent in that one, John. It was absolutely insane, but Atlanta remained unfazed. The Atlanta FaZe took the win 3-0. No mutiny today. Once again, a big 3-0 in the finals. John, the semifinal matches have been really exciting so far for the most part of Call of Duty League. The finals themselves have just been sweep after sweep after sweep.
Yeah, and there's only been two of them, and both of them have been sweeps. That's, I mean, you're going to go down the same path Overwatch League did, where everything was so predictable, it became very boring. And when it becomes boring, you lose viewers. When you lose viewers, that's money. That's going to be the issue. How are you going to make this more competitive? Now, Chicago Huntsmen, I believe they won the first week. Let me double check here. They did 3-0 over the Dallas Empire. So it's kind of cool to see them make their way back in week two to at least the semifinals. So there is some consistency there. The Atlanta FaZe, a huge organization, the only organization allowed to use their actual parent title?
Two of them, actually. Optic, Los Angeles. Optic,
that's
Optic
true. Pardon me.
Well.
Optic is the other one. So kind of unique that Blizzard all of a sudden is allowing them to do it, but we're just neither here nor there. But it's good. It's good that we're seeing these teams remain competitive. It's a very competitive league so far. But yeah, if the finals keep ending up being the 3-0 sweep, it's not good for this league going forward.
And for those of you interested in the Call of Duty League, the next event is going to be March 7th through 8th, and that is going to be out there in L.A. L.A. does have two teams in this league. We have Optic as well as the second L.A. team that did not participate this past weekend, and that is the Los Angeles Gorillas. So you can check that one out. Again, it's that first/second weekend of March, Los Angeles. Over to the Overwatch League, John, we have the Washington Justice Homestand, hosted here at the Anthem in Washington, D.C. Some really exciting matches here. A few of the teams that came out were New York Excelsior, Philadelphia Fusion, the Boston Uprising, Houston Outlaws, Paris Eternal, and our very own hometown team, the Washington Justice. Unfortunately, you and I were not able to attend due to an event we had priorly scheduled, but the event overall looked really good. I know the poor Justice players were sick all weekend, which kind of sucks, but the home crowd turned out very well. It seemed like the fans who traveled in had a great time from what I saw via VODs and from what we've heard from friends and other people at the Justice. So I think it went really well overall, and some of these matches did end up quite competitive as well.
Yeah, day one, like we all thought, would be your most competitive day. The New York Excelsior versus Philadelphia Fusion, it did live up to the hype. It was a 3-1 scoreline in favor of the Fusion. But that was exciting. Boston and Houston on day one went all five maps. And the Justice game against Paris went 4. So, you know, it finished 3-1. So, you know, it was still an exciting day for sure. Now, what kind of surprised me were Sunday's results. You know, you have Excelsior 3-0 in Houston, which is what we thought would happen. But the last two games went 5. You know, Toronto Defiant against the Fusion. Fusion won that one as well in 5 maps. And the Justice jumped out to an early lead against the London Spitfire, and London came flying back and took the win 3-2 over the Justice, a team that came into this 0-2, not completely winless in the season. They were able to take it to the Justice. But day two ended up being just as competitive as day one if you ignore the 3-0 sweep of the Houston Outlaws. But other than that, the VODs that we've watched, like Joey said, you know, the people we've talked to, the Anthem is an amazing facility in D.C. If you're ever in the area and there's a concert you want to go to, you should definitely go visit the Anthem. It's a fantastic facility, and it was a great host for an esports event, especially for Overwatch League. I mean, you know, Grant Parangipe and everyone over there at the Justice put on an amazing, amazing show. I believe there's even one part where there were aerobatic gymnastics, like these two ladies in this gigantic hula hoop hanging from the ceiling. And I'm just watching this. I'm like, this is so weird at an esports event, but at the same time, I'm mesmerized by what they're doing, like 200 feet off the ground. It was absurd. But it was outside of the box. And then at Saturday night, they had a live DJ perform. So it went from an esports event to a concert at the end of the night. It was a massive party, and it was a huge, huge success. I think the Justice really kind of set the bar of what to expect for these homestands going forward.
Yeah, fun fact, listeners, if enough of you leave 4 or 5-star reviews, we'll try to put John in the hoop for the next Justice homestand.
Oh, no.
So.
No, that thing would fall from the ceiling.
Be sure to like, subscribe, and rate, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, John, overall, I think this was great. I think the Justice did a great job with their first homestand. We have 4 more to come here in Washington, D.C. A lot of fun action ahead on that. A little bit of sadder news with the Overwatch League. We do, at least I believe it's confirmed at this point, we will see more of the Asian matches delayed. So some of those homestands that were scheduled to happen in China as well as South Korea, it does look like there are going to be further delays due to the coronavirus outbreak over there. So unfortunately, they were already delayed. It looks like we might see even more delays coming in. So Overwatch League Season 3 is off to a bit of a rocky start over there on Asian soil. Moving to League of Legends, that has seen some delays as well, at least in China with the LPL. The LEC over in Europe is still kicking off just as it was scheduled, and so is the LCS. John, kick us off. What does the LEC standings look like so far?
Current standings in European fashion. 4-way tie for first place, 7-3 for the following organizations. Origin, Fnatic, G2, and Misfits. Which means Rogue, who's technically in second place, is really in fifth place at 6-4, just one game out of that 4-way tie, along with Mad Lions at 6-4 in fifth as well. Excel Esports said, I'm tired of your guys' tie. I'm just going to be in seventh place by myself at 5-5. SK Gaming and Schalke said, you know what? You can have that all by yourself. We like ties. They're going to be 2-8. And Team Vitality, well, they're 1-9, and they're just still happy that they're franchised and they're not going to be relegated. So good for Team Vitality there. They're going to be sticking around there for a while.
Keeping those vitals rolling. John, one of the things I want to point out here, and I have to toot my own bell a little bit here, the fact that I did predict all 6 playoff teams so far, the one that I wasn't sure on that 6th spot was between Excel and Misfits. It does look like Misfits currently holds that spot. I don't remember what I said for that, but I did say it was going to be a tight race between those two, and I think it still will be. I think Misfits is going to fall a bit in the standings. They've looked very hot as of late, but I do think they'll falter a bit as we get closer to playoffs. And I think Excel, I think they're going to barely miss out. I think Misfits does take the 6th spot there, or the 5th spot. But Excel is one of those teams that's very young as well, and they've shown a lot of talent. So I'm excited to see how that rolls. Over to the schedule, is there any game that sticks out to you the most for the LEC?
Well, you're the European expert, Jerry. I was going to ask you that question.
Well, you can, John, but we both can be experts here and there.
I was ready for the LCS. Let me take a look here just real quick.
There's only two correct answers.
There's only two correct answers? Jeez, Joey.
Two correct answers this week.
Make it difficult. Is it Fnatic and Fnatic? Because I feel like you're biased when it comes to Fnatic.
Hey-o, Fnatic isn't one of them, and I'll take the first one. That's Fnatic and Misfits. These are two teams currently tied for 1st/4th, depending how you look at the standings. I think these are really good teams. Fnatic stacked full of veterans, as well as their new addition in Selfmade with Misfits. It's got some veteran talent over there, but also a lot of young blood that is starting to prove itself very well in the streaks they've been on recently. I think Fnatic takes this one, but I think it is a good series. I'll let you do the next day, John.
I'm going to have to go with Origin and Rogue for the second one.
Origin and Rogue, John, that is a great guess, and that is correct.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
If I had to guess, I think Origin and Rogue would probably be the next one. These are two teams. Again, they're up there for vying for the standings. Origin's currently in that first place tie. That's a four-way tie. Rogue just below that. Two very talented teams. I think Origin does win this one, in my opinion, but I do like Rogue. I think there's a lot of talent. Finn in the top lane. I believe it's Inspired in the jungle. He's done a great job so far as well. And Larson in the mid lane. And then you have the veteran anchor of Han Sama down there in the bot lane with Vander. So really good team. And if we're going to highlight one more, I will throw one more out there. That's going to be MAD and XL. I think MAD does win it, but I want to see how XL continues to perform as a young squad up against those teams that look like they're vying for that 4-6 spot as a potential, let's say, I'm going to go with potential, potential playoff contender come summer. So I'd like to see that one as well. Now, I know our magical pogo stick is broken, so we'll just slide our way over there. Maybe atop a cloud, a 10-0 cloud. Cloud 9 leading the way. It could be Cloud 9-0, but they unfortunately had to go win one more. So now they are Cloud 10-0. We have FlyQuest continuing to plant a lot of trees down there in second place at 7-3. TSM holding that solo spot in third place. Immortals, they've drawn blood, John. They're not Immortal anymore. They're sitting there with a 5-5 record alongside Dignitas that has dropped their team for Team Dignitas this past year. Evil Genius is still plotting down there in six with Team Liquid, who I think will start to shoot their way up. Just like Liquid rises when it turns into a gas, I think Liquid's going to continue to move up now that Broxah is there. The Golden Guardian still shining a bit, but down there in a tie for sixth place. 100 Thieves is not stealing many wins just yet. And Counter Logic Gaming, John, the only Logic they continue to counter week after week is their own, as they sit at a 1-9 record at the bottom of this LCS table. Over to our schedule for the LCS. I'll turn it over to you this time. It's fair. You've prepared a bit more for this one. Who are your matches to look out for on, oh, it's 3 days of the week. I'll let you pick two.
So the LCS historian that I am would want to pick TSM and CLG for the classic matchup. But here's the problem. CLG is hot bronze, not even bronze, not even iron. We're talking like recycled plastic four division trash at the moment. So TSM is going to take that one easily. The one that does stand out to me, Cloud9 versus FlyQuest, 5 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, February 29th. That is going to be a spicy, spicy boy. That is between first place Cloud9, second place FlyQuest. Obviously, Cloud9 is kind of running away with the standing, so regardless of the results, even if Cloud9 loses, guess what? Trees get planted. So it's really a win-win when we think about it that way. Cloud9 either wins or we get trees planted. But that would not really affect the standings anymore as of right now. Cloud9 still protecting that three-game lead in first place. And other than that, I may have to drop down the tier here a little bit to sixth place. Team Liquid is going to be taking on 100 Thieves. Team Liquid's starting to bounce back a little bit. They're starting to look like, I don't know, the team they're supposed to be with having gigantic, massive names. We've seen how super rosters have not played out well in the past. TSM is one that comes to mind with Yellowstar when he came over from EU to join. The first version of Immortals, they were absolutely dominant during the regular season. I don't know if we can classify them as a super team, but they were absolutely dominant. Then they kind of fell short in the playoffs as well. Team Liquid, definitely a massive big name team with some massive players and personalities on it. Going up against 100 Thieves, both 4-6, both probably should be performing better than what they currently are. I'm going to go with that with my second pick for this weekend for the LCS.
Okay, John, I'm going to throw one more in there, and that is the other FlyQuest matchup. That's got to be Dignitas FlyQuest for me. These are two teams I think have bounced back and forth, not between that top spot, between like the 2-4 spot. I think both have a lot of talent. They both have talent spread throughout their lineup as well. So I don't know who's going to win this one. I would lean slightly toward FlyQuest, but I think Dignitas has a lot of talent as well. And I could see this really being a very big matchup, not only on the Rift, but also for the trees to be planted after this week. I think that'll do it, sir. I think that works our way through the Call of Duty League. We've shot our bullets and we've moved on. We've had Winston dive the back line in Overwatch League, and then we have had the Rift. The Rift Herald has been spawned. He is ready to dance at the Nexus at the end of the show.
Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and or Google Play. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have multiple ways for you to reach out to us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us in this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, we stream regularly on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/OTN_live. This show, the Level Up Podcast. Listeners out there, come join us live on Twitch, usually Monday nights around 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor, hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We'll catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.